This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Erica Schrader, staff scientist, and Ivy Sager Rosenthal, campaign director for the Washington Toxics Coalition. Erica and Ivy are here today to tell us about the 2011 Healthy Holiday Gift Guide and choosing less toxic toys and products for children. They will also discuss the Toxic Free Kids Act, a bill proposed for the 2012 Washington State legislative session. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Washington Toxics Coalition?
Sure. The Washington Toxics Coalition is a 30-year-old organization that's been working to eliminate the most toxic chemicals and protect health and the environment. And thanks to the work that we've done and our thousands of supporters and the groups that we work with, we've been able to make Washington a leader in taking action on toxics.
To what extent are toxics found in children's toys and other products for children?
Well, over the past number of years, there have been a number of instances where we've found toxics in children's toys. You probably remember lead was in Thomas the Tank Engine and a lot of other toys. Our state, Washington, and the federal government have taken action on lead. So we don't see as much lead in toys, but we still have toxics problems in toys and other children's products.
Which toxics are likely to be found in children's products and toys in addition to lead?
Well, I can give you some examples of the concerns that we have. One is with PVC toys. So a lot of toys, the soft plastic toys that you see will be made of PVC or vinyl. And vinyl is a plastic that can't be made into a product just by itself most of the time. So chemicals are added such as plasticizers, and often the plasticizers that are added are phthalates, which are chemicals that we're concerned about because of their effects on reproduction. So that's one of the materials that we're concerned about in toys. The other thing about PVC or vinyl is that we also see a lot of metals that are used. And so those items can still have metal stabilizers like lead and cadmium and other toxic chemicals are present.
Would you say more about the health effects of these chemicals?
Sure. Well, of course, we're concerned about lead because of its effect on intelligence. Cadmium is a carcinogen. And phthalates are hormone-disrupting chemicals. And what we see in laboratory studies is that when animals are exposed before birth to phthalates, there are problems with their reproductive systems, such as smaller abnormal testes or undescended testicles.
How is exposure from the toxic compounds in children's toys most likely to take place?
Well, there are all sorts of ways that kids can be exposed to toxics from toys and other products. And so it really depends on the products. And I can give you some more examples of the toxics that we're concerned about. Another class of products that we might be concerned about are cosmetics. And some of the toxics that we see in cosmetics are chemicals like formaldehyde, which is a carcinogen, and parabens, which are preservatives that are used that are hormone-disrupting chemicals. And so when you use cosmetics, you can have dermal exposure and inhalation exposure, you know, anything that gets into the air. Some of the other chemicals actually build up in our house dust. So another class of products that we're concerned about are foam-containing products. And the reason for that is that they contain toxic flame retardants. And some of the toxic flame retardants that we're seeing in children's products, you know, everything from nursing pillows to changing pads, are carcinogenic. And what happens with those chemicals is that they actually escape from that foam because they're not chemically bound to it, and they build up in the air so we can breathe them. They also build up in our house dust. And kids, because they spend time on the floor and they have a lot of hand-to-mouth activity, actually ingest quite a bit of house dust. And so that's a major exposure route.
Why are the toxic compounds in the products in the first place? Do they serve some role, or are they just there by accident?
Well, it's a little bit of both. In some cases, the chemicals are contaminants. One example of that is a chemical called 1,4-dioxane that's present in cosmetics. It's a carcinogen, and it's just there as a byproduct. So it's a contaminant. In many cases, they are there to serve either a purpose in the final product or in production. So a lot of solvents are used in children's products, for example, such as toluene is a solvent that has reproductive effects, and that's used to make children's products, and then some of it will be left behind in the product. Flame retardants are an example of a chemical that's intended to be left in the product because that's how it serves its purpose. The heavy metals in PVC are also a chemical that's intended to be there, as well as the phthalates.
In general, are there good substitutions for the products that are there on purpose?
There are many companies that have phased out of these toxic chemicals and found good alternatives. You know, one great example is Johnson & Johnson. An organization tested Johnson & Johnson products from the U.S. and from Europe. They found formaldehyde in the products from U.S., but not in the ones from Europe. And soon thereafter, Johnson & Johnson promised they would get rid of the formaldehyde in their U.S. products as well. So that was an example of a company that knew how to do it. They just weren't doing it because the laws weren't requiring them to. In other cases, such as with the flame retardants, there are many companies that produce products without them. And so it's a matter of our laws don't say that you can't have these chemicals in them. So some companies, the more progressive ones, are going ahead and phasing them out, but most companies are leaving them in.
Would you tell us now about the 2011 Healthy Holiday Gift Guide and your advice for finding safer toys in children's products?
Sure. We produced a gift guide in order to give parents and grandparents and others some simple tips on how to choose products that are most likely to be safe. And so I can share some of those tips for you. One is that there's a great resource at healthystuff.org. This is put together by a group in Michigan, and they test thousands of toys every year. And those results are all posted on the web. So you go to healthystuff.org and you can search for specific toys, or else you can look at categories of toys and get some ideas for which ones might be safer. And one way that I like to use that resource is just to browse it and get a feel for which companies tend to have the safer products. Because you won't always be able to find that specific product in the store, but you can get a sense of which companies are going to be more reliable for having safe products and then go to the store and choose from that company. So that's one tip. Another is to always avoid vinyl and PVC. And, you know, a simple way to do that is to just avoid the soft plastic toys. They're not always labeled as vinyl, and sometimes it's really hard to tell, but you can just avoid the soft plastic toys, and then you'll be sure you're avoiding vinyl. And, of course, you can choose plastic-free toys completely. You know, there are wonderful toys that are made of wood, cloth, wool, or paper. My children love paper dolls. My younger daughter has a wonderful cloth doll that she loves. So there are wooden blocks that a lot of kids like to play with. There are some great options out there that aren't plastic at all. Another is to avoid children's metal jewelry. There have been a lot of problems in the past number of years with heavy metals, including lead and cadmium, being used in kids' jewelry. And it looks like they've taken some good action on lead. We're not finding as much, but it's still really a good idea to just avoid that costume jewelry for kids because they do use those heavy metals sometimes to add weight to the product. Art supplies are another area where you should be careful. There are surprisingly high number of toxics that are used in art supplies, but there are some simple guidelines you can use to make sure you're choosing safer products. One is to look for the ACMI AP seal. So it'll have a big AP on it and a circle. So those are safer for children's products. And what you want to avoid is the one that says ACMI CL. So they look really similar. That information is on our Healthy Gift Guide, so you can take a look at that and remember which one to look for and which one to avoid. There are also some types of art materials that are safer choices. Things like if you want to choose paints, things like watercolors and tempera paints are better choices. You want to avoid rubber cement and choose things like regular school glue. And there's information on our website about making better choices on art supplies as well. And then you can also buy from companies that specialize in safer toys. And some good examples of those are Planet Happy and Rosie Hippo. So there are companies that are doing some of your work for you and really making sure that they're stocking safer toys. And so that's a great way to go, is shop at those places.
Are more expensive toys likely to be safer?
It's really hard to say in general what's like more likely to be safer. You know, Thomas the Tank Engine was not a cheap toy at all. So in some cases, even the companies that are charging more don't have as good of controls as they need. But I would say in general, probably you could expect that if you're shopping for toys at the dollar store, you're probably more likely to find toys that are contaminated.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Erica Schrader, staff scientist, and Ivy Sager-Rosenthal, campaign director for the Washington Toxics Coalition. Our topic is the 2011 Healthy Holiday Gift Guide about how to choose less toxic toys and other children's products and the Washington State Toxic-Free Kids Act. You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You alluded a bit to this earlier, but how much can we rely on labeling to tell whether a toy is safe?
Well, there's really very little information on the label. Companies are not required to provide information about what they're using in their products for the most part. You can find some information on art supplies on the label, But for most toys and other children's products, you can get very little information from the label. We are going to start getting more information in Washington State about what toxic chemicals are in children's products because of a law that was passed in 2008 that's requiring companies to report if they contain any of 66 toxics in their children's products. So we'll soon get more information in Washington about what's really in these products, but right now we don't have anything on the label and it's hard to get that information.
What can listeners do if they'd like to test toys that might be in their household for toxics?
It's a challenge to get toys tested. I mean, there are laboratories you can go to that have the capability of doing that. Or they could also request healthystuff.org to do a test. You know, if there's a certain kind of toy, they can make that request.
Would you like to comment now on substituting experience for stuff in gift giving as one approach to reducing the number of toxic products?
Sure. Sharing experiences instead of stuff is a great way to reduce your overall impact on the planet, as well as not have to have as many concerns about toxic impacts. And at the same time, share time with someone you love. We've had some great experiences with that in my family. We recently gave a child at a birthday party, we gave her an outing for the day and had a wonderful time at Remlinger Farm. So it's a good way to spend time with people and not end up with more stuff in your house.
Washington Toxics Coalition has been working legislatively to address the problem of toxics and products for children. Would you review for us what has been done in Washington State up to now before we get to the current Toxic Free Kids Act?
Sure. Well, in Washington State, we've really been lucky to have legislative leaders and governors who have really taken the lead to protect kids from these toxic chemicals. About 10 years ago, Washington State was the first state ever to target a certain class of chemicals called persistent bioaccumulative toxics for phase out, and these toxics would include mercury, lead. So we were the first state in the nation to do that. And the state has followed with more first in the nation kind of laws, including the first ever ban on a certain kind of toxic flame retardants called PBDEs in 2007. We also in 2008 were the first state to continue to have the strongest standards for lead, cadmium, and phthalates in children's toys. 2 years ago, we passed a bill to ban bisphenol A, a hormone-disrupting chemical, in baby bottles and sippy cups. So we've really been lucky to live here in Washington and have the kind of protections on the books that we do. And as Erica mentioned earlier, we do have the only law in the country that will require toy manufacturers to disclose certain chemicals in their product beginning next year. So we'll have some really good information for parents and for policymakers on the kinds of chemicals that are being used in toys.
To what extent have other states done work similar to what you've done here in Washington State?
Sure. A number of states join Washington as leaders, particularly Maine has similar legislation on the books, as does California. We are lucky to be part of a national coalition called Safer States, which is a coalition of about 15 states who are dedicated to passing laws that protect kids from toxic chemicals.
Now let's move on to the Toxic Free Kids Act and the new bill you're proposing for the upcoming 2012 Washington State legislative session. What is the goal of the bill?
So the Toxic Free Kids Act is aimed at addressing an emerging problem, concern over children's exposure to chemicals called TRIS flame retardants. And these chemicals are currently used in foam in children's products like nursing pillows and car seats, despite evidence that they can cause some adverse health effects. So one goal of the bill is to protect kids' health by eliminating these TRIS flame retardants in products kids use. The other goal of the bill is to address what I like to call the toxic treadmill problem of consumer product manufacturers replacing one bad chemical with another. And TRIS flame retardants are a really good example of this problem. One TRIS flame retardant, called chlorinated TRIS, which is addressed in the bill, was actually removed from children's pajamas in the 1970s because of adverse health concerns. So we thought we were finished with this flame retardant. But as it turns out, it's back nearly 40 years later, in part because chemical makers stopped making another group of flame retardants. And they, quote, voluntarily stopped making these chemicals and instead switched to this chlorinated TRIS, which was removed 40 years ago. So it's kind of a toxic treadmill problem where we replace one bad chemical with another. And so this bill aims to eliminate the problem by requiring makers of children's products to determine whether their products can be made with safer chemicals that won't harm the health, environment, or end up costing them money in substitution problems.
Why did you choose to focus on this bill at this particular point in time?
The evidence that these flame retardants are a problem has really been building for a while. But certain information came to light earlier this year that really made it clear that we needed to do something about these chemicals. This spring, a study of children's products found high levels of flame retardants in children's products. These were including Tris flame retardants. And we know that the levels were really high. We also know that these flame retardants come out of the products and end up in household dust, and the dust can be ingested. And Tris chemicals have been found in our bodies, in breast milk, and in household dust. So it's clear that it really is a problem. In addition, earlier this fall, the state of California recently declared one of the forms of Tris to be a carcinogen. And the Washington State Department of Ecology has actually declared another form of Tris to be a concern for children's health. And this all happened in the last year. So it just seems time that we're ready to do something about it.
What do you do about protecting against fire if this retardant is taken out?
Well, we know there are plenty of safer alternatives available on the market to keep things fire retardant without the toxic chemicals in them. Several product manufacturers have already switched or have never used these kinds of toxic flame retardants in their products. Boppy is one manufacturer, along with Baby Bjorn, Orbit Baby. All of their products have tested free of Tris flame retardants, and we know it's possible to make that. It's also possible to use different kinds of methods. There's a method called the barrier method, where you actually are using a specific kind of construction for your product as well. So we know that it's possible to do it.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Erica Schrader, staff scientist, and Ivy Sager-Rosenthal, campaign director for the Washington Toxics Coalition. Our topic is the 2011 Healthy Holiday Gift Guide about how to choose less toxic toys and the Washington State Toxic Free Kids Act. Who is in favor of the Toxic Free Kids Act? Who is supporting it?
So there's a broad coalition of doctors, nurses, health advocates, environmental groups, as well as the faith community, and then many, many parents and consumers who are concerned about exposures to toxic chemicals. The Environmental Priorities Coalition, which is a group of the 24 leading environmental organizations in Washington State, has actually made the Toxic Free Kids Act one of three legislative priorities for the 2012 session. So it enjoys really diverse and robust support.
How receptive do you think the legislature will be this year?
We're hoping very receptive. As I mentioned earlier, Washington State has been a leader in the past on these types of issues. And so we're hoping that the legislature continues the tradition of putting kids' health first.
To what extent do you think the budget issues are likely to influence the outcome?
It's a really good question. The Toxic Free Kids Act has been drafted in such a way as that it really minimizes the initial costs of the bill. So the fiscal impact of the bill is not great. So we're hoping that that is in our favor as we go into session. But of course, with the budget deficit being what it is, it really is anybody's guess as to where we'll end up at the end of session.
What do you think most stands in the way of having the Toxic Free Kids Act passed?
I think we know that there will be a very strong coalition of opponents of the bill. From our experience passing previous bills that deal with toxic chemicals in kids' products, the chemical makers are very forceful opposition in Olympia, as are certain product manufacturers. For example, the toy industry of America has always been in Olympia opposing our bills. And they're also very vocal, along with certain retailers and with the Association of Washington Business. Johnson & Johnson is another company who we see a lot in Olympia opposing these types of bills. And I think, you know, a lot of it is that they just don't like regulation and they don't like to be told what to do.
What is the likelihood the bill will pass in your estimate?
Don't like to put percentages or make predictions, but I think that the bill is a really good piece of legislation that addresses an immediate concern, a threat to children's health, and then also is really good for manufacturers in that it will help them to get on the right path towards finding safer chemicals and safer materials for their projects. So we're really hopeful and hope that it does pass.
How do you see this work relating to the legislation at the national level, the revision of the Toxic Substances Control Act that's currently taking place?
Sure. We're in this toxic mess of unregulated chemicals and products because of loopholes in federal law, which don't require manufacturers to make sure that chemicals they use are safe before they put them in products. And there is a bill in Congress right now called the Safe Chemicals Act that was introduced by Senator Frank Lautenberg earlier this year that looks to close those kinds of loopholes. The chemical industry, surprisingly, has been at the table for negotiations recently, and in large part, it's because of the different state laws that have been put on the books in the last 10 years regulating chemicals and products, because the chemical industry does not like to have necessarily a patchwork of all these different laws. And so they have actually said publicly that one of the reasons they're at the table and willing to negotiate is because of these state laws that have been put in place. Now, recently, the chemical industry has made some comments that have made it clear that maybe they haven't really been at the table in good faith. But we feel pretty strongly, as I do, I know a lot of our allies, national allies and other state allies, that these state laws are play an absolutely important role in making sure that we get to close those loopholes at the federal level and pass the Safe Chemicals Act and to protect kids and all families.
What is the timeline at the federal level?
That is a very good question. We're hearing that there could be a vote in the Senate in early January on the Safe Chemicals Act. Just last month, there was a hearing in the Senate committee. So we're feeling good about that. The bill's prospects in the House is anyone's guess. And with the 2012 elections coming up, they may or may not want to address the bill. So for those reasons, it's all the more important that we continue to pass laws at the state. States are the ones who know, have the experience of what's going on in the ground with products and chemicals and children's health. So we feel really strongly that because the prospects for the Safe Chemicals Act are kind of up in the air right now, that these state laws that aim to regulate these kinds of chemicals and products are really important and vital.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think it's easy to get overwhelmed by information on toxic chemicals and products, especially for parents who, you know, are so busy trying to protect their kids from everything under the sun that when Erica or I start to talk about formaldehyde or bisphenol A, people either freak out or your eyes glaze over and say, oh, I can't deal with it. It's too many. But I think, you know, with our Healthy Holiday Gift Guide and other tips we have on our website, there are some simple ways for people to protect their families immediately from these toxic threats. But it's also important to remember that you can't buy your way out of the problem, that there are just too many unregulated chemicals and products that we don't know about. And so while you can take some steps immediately to protect yourself, it also is really going to take change in our laws to truly protect our health and the environment from these toxic chemicals. And so I urge people, when they're out using our tip guide, to also think about calling their legislator or sending an email to their legislators asking them to pass laws that really do protect us from these chemicals.
Well, thanks so much for being here. You have just been listening to Erica Schrader, staff scientist, and Ivy Sager Rosenthal, campaign director for the Washington Toxics Coalition. For more information, check on the web at watoxics.org, where you can find a copy of the 2011 Healthy Holiday Gift Guide and also information about the Toxic Free Kids Act. Again, that's watoxics.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.